Talk about the Greens, that bunch of idiots.
Hey there, Climactic Collective listeners.
I'm Emerald Moon.
And I'm Tom Bella.
And together we host Serious Danger,
a podcast about Australia's broken political system and its greatest threat,
the Australian Greens.
It's a show about green politics in Australia.
The kind of politics that puts people and the planet before profit.
We talk to cool and interesting people about fighting for good shit, like taxing billionaires,
housing for all,
workers' rights,
First Nations justice,
and drugs. Sweet, sweet, sweet drugs.
Join us on Serious Danger every Sunday. You can subscribe to us anywhere you get podcasts.
You can find us on Patreon. We're at Serious Danger AU on the socials, or just head to seriousdangerpod.com.
That's Serious Danger with me, Emerald Moon.
And me, Tom Ballard. Do you think we need something at the end there? Go Greens.
Welcome to the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Jackie Kidman and Lisa Wisdom, self-proclaimed urban hippies, waste warriors, and passionate women. Tune in for practical information and inspiration on how to reduce your impact on the environment and become a more sustainable you.
Before we begin, Lisa and Jackie would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and the places on which we record our podcast. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Welcome to this week's episode of Sustainable You Podcast. This week, we thought that we would give you a bit of an update on what Lisa's been up to. Most of you would know that Lisa has gone from a volunteer position with Climate for Change, and this is now her paid employment and part of her career path. She was working last year on a big project, and I actually don't know much about this project, so I wanted to use this time for Lisa to catch me up so I could get an understanding of what she was working on. And then we could also share it with you guys.
Sounds like a plan. Let me tell you what I've been doing. So you may or may not know that Climate for Change run a conversation program. So basically they run like Tupperware. We train volunteers to go out and facilitate climate conversations with people in a gathering in their home with a bunch of their friends or family. And within those conversations, we help people to see the way forward to take more effective climate action. And then, like a Tupperware model, we have built-in growth by asking somebody to host the next conversation and inviting some more people along, and we grow our reach that way. It's been Climate for Change's specialty is how to have effective climate conversations. And so last year, when Climate Compass conducted a huge research project into the Australian population, really trying to understand who the people of Australia are and classifying them according to their attitudes and behaviours towards climate change, they asked us to consolidate a lot of that research into an easy-to-use conversation guide that anyone could use, anyone at all, really. People who are concerned about climate and want to have better conversations with others about climate change. And that could be in any context. So the guide was designed to be used so that you or I could read them and then, you know, at the next family function, feel more equipped to have a tricky conversation with someone in our family, or we could use the data and the information to write more effective presentations or speeches based on who we think our audience is. Really apply it in lots of different contexts.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was good.
It sounds like it needs to be like a little teeny, teeny fold-out one that you can just tuck in your back pocket when all of a sudden you're like, someone starts firing things at you.
Oh, my God.
Around.
Yeah, that was really the idea of it. Mm. But once I started writing, I realized that, you know, trying to consolidate, I think there were over 80 pages worth of slides, and that's like presented research in slide format, and I had to try and condense that. We wanted a 3-page document. We've ended up with a 10-page document.
Oh.
But a lot of those pages are pictures.
Pictures
had to make
are important.
It look nice. Had to make it look nice. So there's some really good information in there, but it's the tip of the iceberg. Mm. And that was a huge challenge for me in trying to figure out which is the most important information, because there was so much in there that was just amazing to learn about Australia.
Mm. And I guess it's for you to kind of go back to that, what you said, it's around someone being comfortable or confident to be able to have that conversation with their uncle or their grandparent, or and how to do that well.
Yeah, too. And also understanding what it is that we're trying to get out of that conversation. Mm. So having a kind of a targeted conversation, not just one that's going to create kind of an argument or highlight differences, but one that will motivate the person that you're talking with to go, okay, I could be doing this and therefore I will do something extra. Mm. I do care about climate. And it is going to affect the things that I value. Mm. So here's a way that I feel comfortable to take an action from that.
Because, I mean, like most of the time, like just me thinking about now, any conversation that I've had with someone that I know is not on board, you know, that kind of, it's almost like you kind of have to leave it of like, okay, let's agree to just disagree, because you don't want to necessarily lose family members or...
Yeah, that's right.
You know, friends, and that, over that.
That did come sometimes out in the project too. So this project was based on a study that was done in America, I think in the early 2000s, and it classified Americans into six different segments. It was called the Six Americas Study. And these researchers here in Australia have kind of expanded upon that as a basis and identified seven different types or seven segments of Australians. And I'll talk you through maybe a little bit about each of them. Mm. But overall, the recommendation is to only really try and engage with the first five. The last two are...
dead to us.
Essentially, they're just not worth engaging with on the topic.
Mm.
Okay. So they're our doubtful and dismissive people. And the problem is that those types of people, they don't want to reason with science. Like, they don't want you to kind of try and explain the science, because they don't want to believe it's true. And so they're also not afraid of talking about how they feel. They don't, like, they don't let truth get in the way of a good rhetoric or story. Mm. So by engaging with them, all you're doing is making their voices louder. And as we know, the squeaky wheel, what is it? The squeaky wheel gets oiled or something. I don't know.
What is that saying?
I don't know what that saying is. But essentially, you know, we have a small number of loud voices that are anti-climate action, and unfortunately they get kind of magnified in our society, and we need to kind of just not engage with them, to not give them that option to talk about it.
So they were called the, is that the, is that six and seven?
Yeah.
Was dismissive?
Doubtful.
Oh, doubtful.
And dismissive.
So that's, six is doubtful, seven is dismissive.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first segment is the alarmed. We call them the alarmed because they are, I mean, you or I are alarmed. They're pretty aware of what the problem is. They feel frustrated, angry, incredibly sad, grieving about climate. They respond to many messages, so it doesn't take much for people who are in the alarmed category to understand the connection between events that might be happening, like the summer of bushfires, for example, and the climate emergency. Mm-hmm. So they totally don't need to be convinced. But what they do need is more confidence to be able to talk and write to others about the subject. And we really need to be encouraging people who are in the alarmed category to take more public and private advocacy action. So we need them to not only vote climate, we need them to tell others that they're voting climate. And we need them to engage more deeply with those around them and kind of bring them along. There's a subset of the alarmed who were identified as the alert. And the alert are very similar to the alarmed, except that they don't feel like they can make a difference. So they kind of feel a little bit more pessimistic about the whole thing, and they feel like they've kind of already lost the battle. but they're super aware of the issue. They're really interested in taking action. They just don't believe that it will make a difference. So we need to engage with the alert in a similar way, but the alert are also, they tend to be made up of younger males, and so job security and the economy is also an important factor with them. So we need to make links to how taking climate action and transitioning away from fossil fuels will actually provide jobs and economic security in the future. The third category, which is the largest of the categories, is the concerned. And this category is made up of the majority of Australians who, you know, understand the climate science. They don't need to be convinced of it. And they know that it's an urgent and important issue to them. But the concerned feel mostly that the effects of climate change are not as immediate, so that the most of the effects are going to be felt by future generations. And so the level of urgency needs to be communicated to those people. So you might have someone who is willing to kind of say, yes, I need to do more. We need to change our systems, and we know what we need to do, but it's bureaucracy and it's red tape that's going to get in the way. And, you know, they might not feel as though what we do now is going to make a difference for us, but it's going to be the kids that are going to have to save the day. You know, all these students coming through, they're going to be the ones that will make the changes. But we need to convince them that the problem is more urgent, and it's now that the changes need to happen, so that our future children aren't left with destruction to try and pick up the pieces. Same with concerned, similar to the alarmed and the alert, we need to help them build their confidence about talking about climate change. And also, these guys are the ones that would be responsive to learning more about the issue. So they say that, you know, they're influenced by experts, by farmers, by doctors, people with some sort of authority of knowledge, and also by, you know, David Attenborough and films like that. So we could encourage these people to say, actually, I watched a really interesting documentary the other day about the dairy industry or about seaweed cultivation. You know, do you want to watch it with me on the weekend? That kind of thing. They're open to educating themselves more about the problem. Underneath the concerned, we have the cautious. And the cautious are still an important group because they know that climate change is real and is happening. They're just not 100% convinced about who caused it and how much effect humans have had on the climate crisis.
Okay.
So there's elements of, you know, you might hear them sort of say, I'm unsure about my individual impact, or, you know, Australia, we're so small, we don't actually even consume that much. It's like China needs to pick up their game. It's how whatever we do is not going to make a big difference when India, and, you know,
until they make the changes, nothing that we do is going to matter.
Correct.
Yeah.
So again, we don't have to convince them of the science, but we do have to link it a little bit more heavily with things that are important to them, which is often economic security, healthcare, safety and security, and the cost of living. So by kind of talking to them more about, so if we don't actually fix this, then, you know, like the summers of bushfires when we were all breathing in smoke, like how do you think that's going to impact us in the future? That kind of thing. You can also highlight the economic opportunity of taking action on climate change with the cautious. So really painting renewables in a positive light and saying that, you know, we are the sunniest country in the world, one of the windiest. Imagine the opportunity that we have economically if we were able to take that natural benefit and run with it to strengthen our economy. So there's ways to shape your messaging to them to help them take more action. And actions for them, you know, they're going to be smaller. They're not going to be able to publicly advocate for climate action. They're not there yet, but they would be interested potentially in signing petitions or in making their homes greener and using those kinds of smaller steps as a stepping stone. And the fifth category or segment of people that we recommend we could still engage with are called the disengaged. So these people don't get involved in politics much, but not necessarily just to do with climate, you know, with any kind of social, economic kind of involvement on or issue. They're kind of like on the outer, and it's easier for them to be on the outer because they're super busy people. Often this group had a skew towards younger women who were mums. So they're looking after their families, they're running their households, and they just don't feel like they have capacity to include fighting for climate action into their lives.
Right. So I could think of a person that I had a conversation with was a mum, and she said to me, once my kids go to school, I have more time to look into that.
Yeah.
So that would be the perfect...
Perfect example.
She's disengaged.
Yeah.
Like, she was concerned, but she was disengaged about, like, sort of like, I just don't have time.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the disengaged are also convinced of the climate science.
Mm.
And they totally get that it's a problem. They totally get that humans caused this increase in emissions. But, yeah, they're just not willing to kind of put themselves into the action area, to fight against it. So, you know, it's super important to still have conversations with the disengaged. Just by gently engaging them, you don't quite know how much you'll influence that person and how then after that conversation, and especially, you know, not putting such high expectations on those conversations, just going, yeah, cool, well, this is what I've been doing because this is how I feel about it. And then that person might then go away and notice something that they've never noticed before, or read an article that they previously would have just skipped over, and slowly their engagement with the issue will grow and then they'll be willing to take more action. But, you know, if we relate climate action with issues around cost of living or making it feel relevant, they're also more likely to make changes. Yeah. So they would, like, read an article, watch a program, make their homes more efficient, or sign a petition as well. So they're the first five segments. And as we said, the next two, doubtful and dismissive, I'm not even really going to...
They don't need airtime.
No.
They don't need airtime.
They don't.
No.
They don't.
No. So I love that, Lisa, that there's those categories, and I can almost, like, as you were talking through, I could almost kind of go, oh, yep, such and such is in that category, they're in that category there. I've got a few people in the dismissive and the dead to us category. Like, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I know when to engage and who to engage. You know, like, that's what I think I've worked out over the years.
Yeah.
Keep going. Tell us what happens now with this document. And
yeah. So I guess the important thing to know is that I did that too. When I was reading through all of the segments, I'm like, oh my God, yep. I know someone who is, like, completely dead center, a concerned person or a cautious or whatever. But it's important to know that there's probably elements of all of the segments within most of us. So, you know, part of me, I was concerned, like, 5-10 years ago, I was a concerned, but I was also disengaged.
Yeah, you could, it's not simple, they're not simply black and white there.
So I'd strongly say, don't just kind of assume that, you know, because somebody's showing traits of this particular type of segment, to really peg them in there, because they also may be willing to take more action than what we give them credit for. And so what became apparent was that we couldn't just put all this out there and then not have some overarching tips for how to engage with somebody and how to have an effective conversation. So this guide also goes through five universal conversation tips, and I'll quickly run through them now. First is to actively listen. So to ask questions and to kind of come from a place of curiosity rather than a place of judgment, and kind of, like, lead in with, you know, if someone says to you, oh, yeah, I don't know all about that climate crisis, you know, stuff, like, all we've got to worry about is the economy and jobs, then instead of kind of getting mad inside and saying, well, it's important to me because of this, and, you know, don't you know that this or that, and the scientists, basically say, oh, okay, so tell me more about that. Why is it that you think that, you know, it's either the environment or jobs. Like, talk to me about that. What's making you think that? And as soon as you start to ask questions, you learn more about where these people are coming from. And by listening without judgment, which is tip number two, you'll be able to sort of understand their values and what's underpinning what they're saying to you.
Can I just say, the Greens leader, Adam Bandit, just actually spoke about something like that around the environment or jobs. I know this is a bit different to what the guide.
Yeah.
But so, say for example, ExxonMobil are closing down the Altona coal, I can't remember what it is. And they were saying that, but they're not, they're closing it down, but they actually haven't done any transitioning of what happens to those 350 workers once they no longer have any jobs. So when we talk about the environment or the jobs, it's not to say who's big business aren't dealing with that. It's more people when we talk about renewables and that sort of stuff that we are thinking about the people. You know, so he's making it quite clear, saying this is a company that's shutting them down and has got no transition for these people to move out of where they're going to go, what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So don't think that it's just greenies going in there and closing down these big plants.
Yeah.
That was a decision that ExxonMobil made because it wasn't profitable anymore.
And that's where, I guess, if the system and the policies are there to manage corporations so they can't get away with not transitioning their workers into new roles, or that the government's providing new industries to transition them into new jobs, that's where the responsibility lies. Yeah, definitely. We don't want people to lose their jobs just because we care about the environment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The third universal conversation tip is to focus on the vision. So this is where, you know, historically people have, it's been a message of doom and gloom. We're destroying the environment. We're going to, you know, it's a disaster. It's an emergency. And coal is bad and oil is bad and gas is bad. And it's all of these negative messages that they aren't the vision of the future. We want to make people understand that transitioning away from fossil fuels is actually going to build a really beautiful and positive future. And so we need to help paint the picture of what that future will look like. We don't want people to kind of go, oh God, we're changing our energy provider, and so we're going to be out of pocket and poorer, and our kids are going to struggle, and they're going to grow up in an uncertain future. We need to kind of shift that picture for them and help them understand that it's a cleaner way of living, and it will increase community, and it will, you know, like all of the benefits. We need to paint the positive vision. Then we actually have to help people see their place in that solution. So we can't just say to everybody, we all need you to stop what you're doing, go out on the streets and march and lay down on the ground and put your body on the line, because that is not everybody's aspiration, and people are able to take the action that they feel comfortable with. We need to push them outside of that comfort zone a little bit. And we have to understand that we need action on all levels of society. So we need individuals doing the best at living sustainably within their own homes and communities. We need communities to band together and councils to run programs to make sharing and community gardens and those kinds of facilities available to everyone. We need the business to lead the way and to innovate and green up on their own at the moment, because there's no legislation involved. Clean up their act and really push that kind of agenda themselves and see the financial benefit in that. And then, of course, we strongly need the systemic change to make this all so much easier for everybody else. So we need to help people see where they fit in to that solution, and then to convince them that by putting themselves out there, they just help everybody move along and help this change happen quicker. And the final tip is to talk about your feelings, Jackie. We're good at that, aren't we? It's important to share your own values and your own story and how you came to where you are, and your why, because it helps to make you relatable to the person that you're talking to. It helps increase your credibility. And and the research has actually shown us that when it comes to understanding climate change, most people value the opinions of their friends and family and colleagues as much as they value those of experts, scientists, doctors, firefighters. Yeah. So we have influence, and I guess because people know we're real, like we know these people who we're talking to. And so it's important to tell them what happened to you and what made you realize something, so you've made this change. And that helps as well. So yeah, that in a nutshell, a long nutshell, sorry, is the work that I put together last year. And you can actually download your own copy of this guide on the Climate for Change website. So you just need to go to climateforchange.org.au.
And we could put that in the show notes too, that link.
Yeah.
And you could download it.
You can download it, print it off, have it there as a reference, or just, you know,
placemats for your next dinner party.
Play a game and you can try and like segment your entire family and friend network. No, but the idea is that we share it far and wide because we want people to be having better, more targeted and effective conversations about climate change that don't just share frustration but go nowhere. Like, we want people to feel empowered that they have the ability to really shift the movement.
And I think it's awesome, amazing work, because, like, I mean, I know that I can definitely work more on my conversations that I kind of have with people, and also encourage others to have those conversations too, because I do find that there is a group or majority of people just won't have them. They'll either have them to the extent that no one wants to talk to them about it anymore. So this is great, just to give some tips on of how to do it, how to actually manage as well, like, your own emotions while you might be talking to someone that is on the complete opposite side of the fence to where you are at, and to kind of also know that you don't need to keep pushing and pushing, because they're obviously number six and number seven. And you're better off focusing on number five.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Find the number five in the room and talk to them.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So, great. Like, as you were talking about it, you've obviously got it up on your laptop here, so I can see what it looks like, and I'm looking forward to actually sitting down and having a bit of a read and working on it myself too. Yeah,
it's a good document. I'm quite proud of it, actually.
You should be.
Thanks. And we had some beautiful graphic designers kind of draw some
I love that
cute little pictures to go along with it, really help you identify with the different segments. But the other thing that I just want to say is that Climate for Change have put this information from the Climate Conversation Guide, as well as more, an expanded resource, into an online learning platform, which is the other project that I've been working on.
Glad you're busy, Lisa.
I have been very busy. And so if people are interested in finding out more about this, and as well as extra resources that Climate for Change has developed over the last 5 to 6 years, then just go to, we'll provide a link in the show notes, but if you go to climateforchange.org.au/facilitate, our four courses, of which the first one is called Talking About Climate Change, is up there, and you can enroll and do an online course to help you have better conversations about climate change online at your own pace.
Are they free, or are they
totally free?
Wow, that's amazing.
Open to everybody.
Wow.
So it's exciting.
Yeah, let's spread the word about that. Definitely. I want to do it.
Do it.
I want to do it, because I think that's what we were talking about this a little bit earlier, was that just because we have a podcast on Sustainable You podcast doesn't mean that we're experts necessarily in having those climate conversations, because I mean, every human is different, and so sometimes things hit you and you're like, oh gosh, well, it worked, I had that conversation the other day and it was fine, and then this has blown up, you know. And that's just that difference in where people are sitting.
Of course.
So I think it's always something that we could refine and work on, and it's almost as well, because I think we live in the world of climate emergency and sustainability, that people do tend to think that we are the experts and we know it all. Mm. And they try and kind of almost like, oh, I've got a fact that I'm going to cut them down. Unfortunately, that there are those people out there.
Yep.
I don't find them as much because we don't go out anymore. But so I don't meet new people.
We have no life.
And we have no life.
We have kids.
Yeah. But, you know, I think it's still good to feel confident in what we're passionate about and why we are, and that reinforcing, and also then to be able to refer to others by saying, look, if you want to know some more about this, here's some other resources.
Yeah, for sure.
So good.
Yeah.
Well done. Well, I really do appreciate you giving me a rundown of what you've been up to. I missed you last year, so it's good to know that, you know.
I was working away. Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. It's good to share it and it's good to talk about it. And if it helps somebody to have a better conversation, then I've done my job.
You have, absolutely. Yeah. So as always, we hope that you enjoyed this episode and we hope that we've inspired you to become a more sustainable you.
Sustainable You can be found on Instagram at Sustainable You Pod, on Facebook at Sustainable You Podcast, or connect via email at sustainableyoupod@gmail.com. Episodes are created by Lisa and Jackie. If you appreciate the podcasting information shared, please like, subscribe, and share. If you are listening on iTunes, Jackie and Lisa would appreciate you giving them a 5-star rating and writing a review to help other people find their podcast.